Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Malta Historical Society entitled The Great Siege Through Turkish Eyes. This talk is delivered by Professor Arnold Cassola.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you to the Malta Historical Society for the invitation. It's an honor to be here and to be part of this series of lectures. First of all, the idea, why did I go to Istanbul State Archives in 1990? And how I managed to go, because it's little things in life, it's coincidences, normally research, you go to look for one thing and you find exactly something, you don't find what you want to find and you find something which you didn't imagine. So first of all, just to know, the archives in Istanbul, most of the stuff of the Great Siege period are destroyed because of various wars. Every time they used to have somebody conquering Istanbul and destroying the archives and the documentation, etc. So they told me you will find very little things about this period, which is 972, 973, according to the Islam calendar. But anyway, there was a catalogue with about on these manuscripts, which are called registers, which are called Muhimme Defteri. Muhimme Defteri. Defter is a, it means, I then found out, register. And Muhimme is the period where the, and when they were transcribing them. And there was a catalogue. And I asked them, sorry, what would be a word like Malta, Maltese, look like? So I started going through these catalogues for the period, of course, 972, 973. More or less, which was 1564, 1565. And then, ding, I see, so there were about 40 scholars. You had all people from the Balkans. But there are very few people in the world, or there were in 1988, who could read this stuff, because this is old Turkish transcribing. So I would go, excuse me, what are they saying here? Oh, here, yeah, Suleiman is telling that he's sending troops to Malta. Ah, okay. So I managed to get a few translations. On the last day, 3 hours before my plane was leaving, I went up to I was doing this stuff here, and went up to another guy. And this chap, who turned out to be Idris Bostan, who is then co-author of this book, turned out to be a historian of the Ottoman Navy. Tell me, I remember years ago I had come across a manuscript on a register with regards to Malta. Let's go and find it. Looking for it. Understand that. And it was this Malta campaign register, Malta Severine Defteri, it would be in Turkish, and which consists of 112 pages. These pages, they are all transcribed here. These ones here, right? This is page whatever. All written this way. And this is not a history of the Great Siege of Malta. It is not a historical perspective. It is a register of requests by soldiers, by fighters in Malta, on the spot in Malta. Because then, of course, you start learning a bit about the system, etc. The system was that there was no inheritance system at that time in the Ottoman structure. So soldiers were rewarded, and they were given land, sort of fief, a sort of commanderie, I suppose, of the knights. It was called timar, given lands in Anatolia, in different parts of that, with the money, the rent they would get out of it. The money, because we'll use this word as we go along, I think, is akçe. Akçe is the coin of that time. And you would have, I will read you just one or two to show you how boring this register was, extremely boring. But then you could, when you analyze the whole thing, you could start gleaning information. So basically you would have somebody coming, people, Arnold from Sui'i, came and stated that Joseph from Srema was killed during the St. Arma, St. Elmo attack. Arnold from Sui'i therefore asked that the land of Joseph from Srema be given to him, the land in, I don't know where, somewhere in Anatolia, whatever. And then it has been given to him because Arnold behaved himself courageously during the attack on the Girmemburku, the bastions of the mill, which was must have been something like Isla Senglia, the mill on that part of the harbour. And you would get, therefore, declaration that the person was given a promotion, that person was given money, was given a post, because he had done so and so. Okay? And through these, then, you can get, so, for example, look, since Hassan, who held the Timar in the sub-district of Mekri, died in the Malta campaign, it has been decreed that part of his Timar, the land, should be given to Ermish, son of Hussein, who passed away while holding a Timar in the sub-district of Arach in the Sanjak of Kastamonu. Okay, these are all places, etc. But it's all like this, very, very boring stuff. But you are getting enormous details on, first of all, people coming here, where they came from, etc. But I'll go in order. So we were talking about the, first of all, the archives, the destroyed manuscripts, and I told you the registers, the Muhimme registers, which had basically decreased by the Sultan. You would have one order after another. They used to be registered in copies, no? And therefore, amongst these orders, some of which had been already published, but of course, this I discovered as I went along, by a certain Serafettin Turan and C.H. Imber in his History of the Turkish Armada, would have some orders, for example, relating to Malta, as, for example, to start off with, we have towards, here we are, in November 1564, we have the decision to attack Malta has already been taken. Of course, if we look at San Miniatelli, Zabarella, we have it, we know that it was taken on the, in October, in, on the 6th of October. But here we have a direct reason given by the Sultan, by Suleiman. And the Sultan is sending an order, a command to Chavush. Chavush is a messenger, Ramadan. And an order given to the Berley Bey of Karaman. Berley Bey is a rank, a commander of a region, Karaman. And he says, I have decided to send an armada that includes many warships to occupy Malta. I therefore order the governors of Aksare, Nigde, Kirşehir to round up their soldiers and join the Ottoman Imperial Navy. Every governor has to muster 1,000 cavalrymen. So we start seeing how it happened. These are three governors. Each one had to take along with him 1,000 cavalrymen to bring over to Malta. So as we go along, we will see that we are talking about thousands and thousands of troops. And at the end, this dispels the thought, which was prevalent, and even in Malta, I think, among some scholars, that the siege of Malta was not actually something enormous, but just a glorified raid, a raid which was maybe a bit bigger. But here you will be able to see all the preparations being done. This is the first time that we have it in this register. And it's for me, of course, the more I went along reading this, after it was translated, of course, the more excited I became. In December 1564, we have an order sent to Turgut Pasha. Turgut Pasha is Dragut. And we have now Suleiman stating who is going to be in command of the expedition. I have appointed Mustafa Pasha as commander general of the Ottoman army, that is to conquer the island of Malta. There is never any talk of defeat. It is always, we are conquering the island of Malta, we are taking the island of Malta. Suleiman has no doubts. We are not going to attack only. No, we are going to actually take it. Very proactive and positive mentality. I have also appointed Piali Pasha, the Berley Bey of the Archipelago, commander of the Imperial Navy, and have asked him to join in the siege of Malta. And I am also relying on you, Dragut, because of your military experience. You should help Mustafa Pasha at sea, and you should protect our navy against the enemy's navy, which could set out from other countries to help Malta. What actually happened? So Turgut, Dragut's role, according to Suleiman, was to create a sort of blockade around Malta to prevent the Grand Socorso, the Piccolo Socorso, whatever, from coming to Malta. Now we get to know also why, the reason why Malta was attacked. So December 1564. This is an order given to Hassan by Suleiman David, Belle Bey of Algiers, a commander in Algiers. So you notice that we are, at the moment, we have orders being given to North African part of Maghreb, part of the Ottoman Empire. But we will see through the names that people came from various parts, people participated in the siege from various parts of the Ottoman Empire. And here he says, I intend to conquer the island of Malta, and I have appointed Mustafa Pasha as commander of this campaign. The island of Malta is a headquarters for infidels. Of course, the view of the others, no? Otherness. We always tend to see others as the bad ones, the different ones, the ones, we see it every day, we see it in our everyday life. We are used to ourselves, we are used to our customs, we are used to the way we eat, what we drink, the way we dress, and the others become, so we think always of the Muslims in our history as infidels. This here is the other way around. We were the infidels for them. The Maltese have already, here's the reason why we had the great siege. The Maltese have already blocked the route utilized by Muslim pilgrims and merchants in the East Mediterranean on their way to Egypt. I have ordered Piali Pasha to take part in the campaign with the Imperial Labour, etc. So the Knights of Malta were creating a lot of problems. Commerce, one thing, merchants, the communication between North Africa, Maghreb, and the other parts of the Ottoman Empire. History repeats itself, same thing as Second World War, Malta in the middle between Africa, North Africa again, and Italy, Albania, and whatnot. And he says, the Maltese attack Muslim merchants and pilgrims. The other thing, we must remember the Hajj. Each Muslim was supposed to, if possible, go once in a lifetime to Mecca. But to go to Mecca, you had to pass by boat. If you left from North Africa, you had to pass via off Malta. At that time, there was not Maroni or you know, Pinar, but there were still problems, which we still have today, different problems. And Suleiman, therefore, wanted to stop all this. And he says, I have decided to send an armada. It is an armada. It is not 20 boats, 30 boats, 5,000 people. It is so big that Suleiman cannot go and help other allies in other parts of the empire. And this you see in a letter of about March 1565, before the armada has left for Malta, by Suleiman to the Khan of Crimea, on the other side. And this is what Suleiman says. You have sent a letter on Russia's activities in your area, and you have requested us to provide you with more auxiliary troops and ammunition. So the Khan of Crimea, Odessa, I don't know where, was being attacked by the Russians. And he says, please send me rinforzi, send me men, food, ammunition, because we need to counter. And Suleiman tells him, I'm sorry, this is impossible at the moment. You have to stay there. Al-Ranjati, see how what you can do. Because the reason is that I have decided to send an armada to occupy the island of Malta. The Maltese attack Muslim pilgrims and merchants frequently, he tells him. At the same time, the Hungarians have rebelled against us, and I therefore have to send the Rumelian army there. So he's sending some troops to Hungary to help over there. He is preparing his armada for Malta, and the Khan of Crimea has to see what he's got to do. So, you will also see that the anxiety of Suleiman, the distances were far. So we have here a passage where Suleiman, and this is in July, this is around 16 July 1565. The Armada has reached Malta around the end of March. It's been here a month and a half, and Suleiman doesn't know what's happening. And he sends this around the 16th, not on the 16th of July, 17 Zilhijjah 972. It's an order given to Vizier Mustafa Pasha here in Malta. And Suleiman, look, listen to the tone. I sent you over to Malta a long time ago in order to conquer it. But I have not received any message from you. I have decreed that as soon as my order reaches you, you should inform me about the siege of Malta. Has Turgut Berley Bey of Trablus, Trablus is Tripoli, arrived? He was already dead, buried and everything. Has he arrived 15 days before? Has he been of any help to you? What about the enemy navy? Have you managed to conquer any part of Malta? They had taken St. Elmo already, after 30 days, but it was taken. You should write to me telling me everything. So you can see this Suleiman, the Magnificent, no email, no telephones, no nothing, and no messenger had yet arrived, gone back to Istanbul to relate what was actually happening here. So, but then towards the end of July, we know that he had received news because we have another order sent to Vizier Mustafa Pasha, where he says, you have sent a letter explaining the conquest of the Santarma Tower, Santarma, St. Elmo. You had started to besiege the fortress and to fight with our enemies. I have learned that Turgut Pasha has died during the battle. Piali Pasha, Berley Bey of the archipelago, should take part in the siege of Malta with the navy. You should encourage the army and the Janissaries to fight against the enemies and conquer the island of Malta, blah, blah, blah. There are a lot of also stereotyped phrases, as in the Middle Ages, no? Of whenever you start every entry, it's always more or less starts in the same way. So this is what we have in these registers. These are some of the passages which we have in this Muhimme registers, which is not the Malta campaign register. These are registers containing all the orders given by Suleiman everywhere. Everywhere, all over, you know, they used to be copied by his clerks. And of course, you would have to look for the ones which are relating to Malta. I would envisage, I speak to the university and say, we should have an expert in Ottoman Turkish. There are millions of volumes now. Of course, they might be a bit now, not so much that period, there are also, but there will be, say, 17th century and so on. Who knows what there is? Of course, when you get all those researchers, Bulgarian, Hungarian, they're all Macedonian, they're all looking for their own, the history of their country, not the history of Malta. If we don't have a Maltese who is desitu, they're paid to stay there, maybe not to find anything for 3 years until maybe you get something. That's how research works, and I think we need still to develop this culture in our country. I know it's a question of money many times. How can you afford paying a salary for a work which is, you don't know what result you'll get, but it's a long-term investment which brings then income eventually, even economic income to our country when we enrich our history in this way. Anyway, so Suleiman is also anxious to know what is happening with food, weapons, etc. Because we will see from the register, the preparations, what kind of food they took onto the ships, what kind of weapons were brought over to Malta. And he's asking in about August 1565, the Chavus, the messenger Abdi, has brought some good news from Malta. Okay, so he had arrived, brought good news. But up to now, I have had no news from you, Mustafa Pasha. I have decreed that you should send me some information on the siege of Malta. Have you got enough provisions and weapons for the soldiers? is the day of conquest of the Malta fortress near? Have you sighted any enemy navy? You should send me some information on the situation of the navy, etc. Up to now, I have sent you 7 ships carrying provisions. So, 7 galleys coming from different... I don't know where these specific ones come, but as we go along, we'll see Athens, we will see near the south of Albania. They used to come from different places with food and so on. So, these are the initial entries, and now let's go to this register, the Malta campaign register, the Malta Seferina Defile, which is just 112 pages, just on Malta this time, on the spot in Malta, written in 1565, with requests of the soldiers, of the cavalrymen, of the doctors, of the musicians who came here with the Armada, asking for promotions, money, a rise in salary. So life is more or less repeat itself in different days, but human beings remain the same. And so, as we can go along, this is over. The voyage, what is interesting to start off with here, or at least what I found interesting when I was reading it and discovering what there was. You should imagine how I was reading this. So with this Bostan, he was doing the translation in English and so on, but of course he was doing it in Turkish, in modern Turkish. You have the modern Turkish the names. We have an S with a Sedilia. You have, you know, so many different letters. And he was sending me on Macintosh, and I will tell you, I didn't have a computer at home, so I used to go to Alternativa in Floriana, where we had our Apple, because it was an Apple, because I had an IBM, but for printing they used to use Apple Macintosh with it. And I used to go secretly, because I couldn't tell anybody. For 5 years I had to try and, you know, work without, and go and insert the diskette, and I would get a text. Okay, but every so often, and not many words, I didn't know what I was reading, because the S with the Sedilia would come out as FLP in our, I didn't have any Turkish fonts. So for 2 years I worked like this, thinking that, I would pronounce it FLP, you know, Chavush would become Chafufplus. And then, afterwards I realized, but anyway, so it was exciting even then, secretly, because I wouldn't even tell my friends. I remember once a colleague, he was there doing some accounts for the party, you know, checking the bills and what they have to pay. And he came, oh, hello, what are you doing? And he saw Gallipoli, Madonna, he said, Gallipoli. Ah, the war of Gallipoli, Second World War, yes, and switched off, you know. So anyway, these are little anecdotes on how I worked on this thing. What we have, for the first time, we have the voyage to Malta. It is documented how it started off in Istanbul and the various tappe stages, nearly 2 months to arrive to Malta. Remember, they had to fight always in summer. The Ottomans would always try and fight in summer and be back home by September, October. That was one of the reasons also why September was the deadline, because to get spend two months to get back, and you end up in tempest and bad weather, that was a big risk. So they started off on the 29th of March from Gallipoli, or from Istanbul, with a whole fanfare and a whole, it was a real big spectacle, and then moved over to Gallipoli where there was a storm, then they moved to port of Çardak, moves on to Chios, the island of Sakit in Turkish, which is Chios today. On the 16th of April, they arrived from Chios to Koyun. And there they greased the ships, the part of the ships, which the galleys which they had there. In around the 24th of of April. Of course, I'm not doing the whole trip, but it would be nice to have it really documented and so on. They spent 8 days in Athens, Athena. And there they embarked, amongst other things, 3,000 antar of peximet. Peximet was the staple food. Galletti, dried biscuits. Okay? So here we have antar. Antar is used, that's the word in Turkish at that time. Yeah? Even though the weight might actually vary from what it is. 3,000 antar of peximet. On the 1st of May, the fleet was in the Cape of Benefse, and there they celebrated the Feast of Ramadan. On the 7th of May, the fleet arrived in Navarino, so we are now quite near Malta. And the last part, we have 7 March. We're always in March. The 15th of March, we have the last part of the journey, and they arrive in, basically, in the south and land round the Marsash Loch, no? They left in March and they arrived in May. Yes, they left 29 March and they arrived at the end of May. Yes. Okay, then, see the fleet, so on Saturday, 19 Cheval, which is 20th May, the fleet remained in the same place. On Sunday, 20 Cheval, 21st May, Mustafa Pasha and other soldiers landed on the island and settled in their tents. So the following day, all the soldiers were assembled in and around Mustafa Pasha's tent, and the imperial letter of command was confirmed. Okay, that we know then also from our sources, because the good thing is also then to compare the local Western sources, we have millions, to these sources. And sometimes you find, really on the same day, the same thing, and I can name the person who actually killed somebody as described in Balbidico Reggio. So we'll see it as we go along. So what were the most notable events in the Malta campaign register? As I said, we find requests for promotions, increases in salaries, general information, for example, that you have freed slaves, for example, who were thought to be dead. In actual fact, they had been fighting here in Malta. You also see how Piali Pasha sometimes intervenes here, not only to obtain benefits for people, but also to punish people. In the case of Mahmoud, for example, the Persian, or Mehmed, they were deprived of their fiefs, they were deprived of their possessions for misbehavior, and so on. As I said, there was always this motivation given for the grant of a promotion. We get some information there were fathers and sons traveling together in the army. We have Rustem with his son Osman, and you also have requests. So if we look also in the whole text, you will have names of people who are injured. There are 47 mentioned injured, about 200 something dead who died on the way and in Malta fighting, and over 500 names in all mentioned here in Malta. Let me have a look now over here to see, where are they? So, you will notice that they were no surnames, obviously, so they're all Ahmed from the Sanjak of Teke, Ahmed from the Sanjak of Biga, Ahmed from the Sanjak of Aydin, Ahmed from the Sanjak of Hamid, Ahmed from the Sanjak of Bey. So you have this whole list of troops who drowned. These are all people who drowned in Malta or during the campaign itself. And obviously you could therefore create a map of where these soldiers, cavalry, whatever came from. And you will find Sofia, today Bulgaria, Belgrade, today Serbia, Albania, Tirana, Elbasan, today Albania, Athens, Rhodes, Crete, it's full of people coming from different parts of the Ottoman Empire who came to fight here in Malta. So we can create a map and see how many came from the European part of the empire, how many came from the Anatolian part of the empire. This has not been done. Stephen Spiteri has done a great work. Amongst other things, using his book is amazing, the amount of research. But there are so many spunti which one can take, and you know, and then focus on a certain points. One of these is therefore seeing where these people came from through their dates. Now, for example, what troops and ammunitions were provided for this campaign? We don't know exactly, but we do have an inkling, because in the register you do find mentioned numbers of boats, of troops, of food, etc. I'll give you a few examples. Few, they're not many, but we can get some examples. They used to get even the food, obviously, also from North Africa while they were here, which was obviously nearer. So, for example, in the troops. Troops and munitions, let's start with that. What did they use? On the 29th of March, so just leaving, basically, the Armada has just left, the Bay of Thessaloniki, Greece, today, is given an order to send half the amount of gunners under his command to Malta. So all his troops, all his gunners, half of them had to come to Malta on campaign, together with unknown quantities of gunpowder and cannon shells. Around 5th April, between 5th and 20th April, the Qadi, the Nazir, and the Dizdar of Mesistre, another town, are ordered to send over 18 Spanish infidels, so 18 Spanish who had been captured, on an enemy fleet to join the Turkish army. To support the Turkish Navy and to come and fight in Malta against the Maltese. So we know that among, I don't know if they were rinnegati, if they were like Barbarossa, Christians turned Muslims, but it doesn't seem so, because they are described as 18 Spanish infidels who had been captured on an enemy ship, and they forced them to come and fight against the Maltese, or against the knights. In around the 25th of April, the Dizdar of Moton, Dizdar is another rank, these are all various ranks of commanders, etc., of the fortress of Moton, is given an order to put half the amount of black gunpowder in his fortress, in Moton, at the disposal of the fleet. So as they are moving, they are collecting things on the way. A messenger is sent before, they say, you have half a ton, I don't know, of gunpowder, black gunpowder, half of it must be given to the fleet. On the 10th of May, 1565, therefore they are always approaching, you have the Bay of Rhodes, Aliportuk Bay, joins the fleet with 9 galleys. It's coming from Rhodes. While the Bay of Selanik, of Thessaloniki, Ali Bay, joins the fleet with his troops, doesn't say how many. Around the 6th, 10 July, the Qadi and Dizdar of Moton are given an order to provide Hussein of the Hassa gunners. Hassa is a type of squadron. I have all the footnotes here, but of course I cannot remember them all. With what? With as many cannon shells and gun stocks, they were all weighing 16 and 14 16 and 14. So I don't understand anything about armaments, but this was the diameter or size of the cannonballs, 16 and 14 weight. On 12th July 1565, you get the Qadi of Trablus Tripoli Arp. It's what's his name? It's not Dragut. It's the Adi who is in Tripoli, is ordered to provide 4,000 antar of black gunpowder, which he had promised to send to the siege during the siege. I don't know what 4,000 antars of black gunpowder would actually amount to, but I think they are quite big quantities to sustain a siege which lasted quite a lot here. Then we also have on 24 July, these are orders, the commander of Djerba, Tunisia, is ordered to send an unspecified amount again of 14 and 16 cannonballs. And the final command, which I'm mentioning, 25th August, 1565, an order issued to the Berlay Bey of Cesare Larp. Cesare Larp is Algeria. He sent under his command an unspecified number of Algerian privateering ships, so corsairs ships coming from Algeria, and other Algerian ships, as well as 30 galleys. These came from Algeria, so 30 galleys plus a number of privateers on ships on the 25th August 1565. How did these people survive in Malta? Where did they get their food from?
Maltese sausage.
They had a lot of dysentery in Marsa. That was one of the reasons, though, which the Marsa swamps, Muris El Hastan Marsa, we still have it today. You know, it was so wet that they had problems with dysentery. But from the register, we can see that we have on 5th April 1565, for example, the commanders in Yeni Sahiri, Katalka, Ezdin, Livadia, Gribots, these are all towns, were ordered to provide grain and to provide also peximet, the galletti. In around the 25th of April, we get 5,250 antar of peximet from the district of Kalamata, in Greece, which is in Greece today. In that same period, 5,000 cantars of peximet were being baked in Moton for the needs of the fleet, to be divided amongst different ships. 3,000 antars of galletti of peximet in Athens were loaded onto the ships in Athens around the 24th of April. The emin of Egribots was ordered to supply 1,000 mud of grain for the requirements. Mud is a measurement. Mud? Mud? All right, it's mud probably. Yes. then we have on the 26th of April, the Ali Pasha took some galleys from Athens to Korios to again load peximet. In Koron, on the 10th of May, they had baked around 100,000 cantars of peximet, which were partly loaded on the ships, but partly were kept there for the return journey. They were even preparing food to be able to survive on the way back. Here we have for the first time something different. Between 6th and 14th July, Solok Mehmed Reis was sent to Rumelia to buy oil and other provisions. So we have mention of oil. Then we have also between the 10th, 14th of July, an order was issued to the Dizdar of Modon to provide Hussein with different kinds of fruit and other goods to be sold to the troops in Malta. Sold, not given out as rations. So were they luxuries compared to the biscuits which were then the staple food? 23rd July 1565, various commanders from various parts were told to keep in safe custody and in good condition. These are all in the Greek islands, etc. The remaining part of the biscuits, peximet, that had not been loaded onto the ships, because this was to be kept for the return journey too. And that's as regards the kind of food. And don't have much time. Acts of courage. What can we know what happened in Malta? Where do we have anything particular from all these boring entries with people asking to be promoted, etc.? We can have a few examples. So, we have, for example, 11 soldiers. We have a number of 278 people who are outlined for courageous acts. No, Arnold from Sleeman, Joseph from whatever, it's always like that. Some of them are just mentioned because they carried bundles of bushes into the entrenchment. They used to, I remember certain Joe Borch, he's an expert in forestry, made a calculation on the number of trees there were in Malta by reading how many of, he calculated, more or less made a model of, since they were cutting so many bushes to take into the entrenchment, hut up, then there must have been so many trees and so many whatnot in the island, of course. Then there were others who distinguished themselves, 267, for various acts of bravery. For example, Hussein, from the artillery corps, caused great damage to the Christian side because he managed to sink one of the enemy galleys, the knights' galleys, which was anchored in the harbor with his cannon. So we know that this Hussein actually managed to sink a galley in the Maltese harbor. On 21st June 1565, Khalil, the son of Omer, who was an oarsman from the district of Kosisar, managed to cause damage to the St. Elmo fortifications by holding the bastions of the fortress before it was taken. So you get these little, details. We have Ali, the son of the head sailor Pir Nazir, managed to enter Fort St. Elmo before a breach was actually made in it. Must have been very courageous. And he rendered outstanding services by cutting off many heads of the enemy troops, many heads of the Christians in Malta. And this was considered by his peers and superiors as to be an act of great bravery, obviously. Pir Mehmet, the son of Salih from the village of Buyuk Bogali in the Gelibolu district, rendered outstanding services by also cutting off many enemy heads during the conquest of St. Elmo. This thing of cutting off heads seems to be... No, it's not killing people, which I imagine is something that happens, no, during battles. But it's always specifying cutting off heads, beheading. So I don't know whether this was a rite, something that was done to shame. Like on our part, we say it seems scientifically, technically not possible that Lavalette had the heads of the Turks shot out. It seems to be impossible, right? But maybe it's just a way of saying things, a way of presenting the number of enemy skin. I don't know, but it's strange. It's always curious. It's always being mentioned. So here. What is this? Then we have, for example, and this is mentioned when we see the Western sources, our sources, we know that the knights in front of St. Angelo and Isla had built a palisade outside in the sea, right? We know that on Wednesday 12 Zilhijja, 972, 11 July 1565, Salih ben Mahmoud from the 23rd Squadron is commended for his courageous feat, which consisted in cutting one of the booms laid by the knights in the palisade in the sea in front of the other side of what is today Cotonera. Then we have Mustafa, the son of Mehmed Rais, who dug away at the tunnel where mines and bombs were kept during the Battle of the Malta Fortress. He managed to actually enter where the polveriera or something, I don't know, where they were keeping their gunpowder, the knights, polverista, whatever. And he was injured in the course of that. Then we have Omer was given a promotion because he performed an extremely important task. What did Omer do? He captured a Christian messenger, one of our side, of the Medina fortress, Medina, who during the night was trying to deliver a letter to the Malta fortress, to Birgu. Now, these tie in with, but this one was captured. This, we know that he was captured, so he did not become as famous as Sonny Bayada. Probably he ended up at the Dolorata Cemetery much earlier, you know. It's interesting, Gottfried Wedhinger pointed out that this is the first reference in the history of Imdina where Imdina is referred to as a city. It seems, according to Wettinger, that this is the first time that it's Imdina is because, you know, Città Vecchia, Città Notabile, is referred to as a city, with the name of Imdina. Ali Ben Hussein, who was a former cavalry soldier of the right squadron of the 97th squadron, who had a daily wage of 13 aksir, what did he do? He was very courageous during Fort St. Elmo attack and also during the attack on the German Burku, the bastions of the mill, what's called the bastion of the mill. But he managed also to capture an enemy, take him back alive to his camp. We have various other acts of courage. We have people like Ahmed Rais, who is a galley captain, or else Abdullah, or Hamza, or Razul Rais. These all managed to capture Christian frigates coming from Messina. So we see that there were a number of boats coming over. I don't know. This we are talking here about 16th August, something around 16th to 19th August. So this could tally with the Piccolo Soccorso coming over. But,
Piccolo Soccorso
was before the 16th August? So therefore, in between the Piccolo and the Grand, we have others trying to come over and being captured. They are coming from Messina. So there must have been a continuous flow of boats between here and always Messina. Never mention Siracusa or Agrigento. They're all coming from Messina. Why? I don't know, but these are all give you little ideas to, you know, who knows what to research. But certainly, the most outstanding person of all for courage is, at least according to this register, is this Mehmed bin Mustafa. So who was he? He was part of the corps of guardsmen, and he did various courageous deeds. First of all, this Mehmed bin Mustafa, and this ties exactly with Balbi di Correggio. Balbi di Correggio says that when the Turks landed in Malta, the Adrien de la Rivière was captured alive by the Ottomans. Well, now we know that the person who captured him, on the same day, we have this entry in the register, although he is courageous and being given a promotion, because Mehmed bin, what's his name here, bin Mustafa, was the person who captured alive Adrien de la Rivière on that same day. But he didn't only do that. He must have been really, this guy, physically an extraordinary person, I suppose, because during the attack on Fort St. Elmo then, he was the person who captured the banner of the enemy. He actually went up and managed to get off a standard, whatever it is, a banner. And during the Battle of the Malta Fortress, on the other side of the harbour, he managed to enter the bastions occupied by the Maltese infidels and to chop off a number of heads, obviously. Because, that's That's the normal practice. And he was also injured. But he is renowned for three feats of courage. Because of all this bravery, it has been decreed that in accordance with the law, a timar, so a commandery, a feud land, of the value, with an annual value of 15,000 akse, was given to him on the spot to reward him for his bravery. What happened in the Turkish camp? This I think we can skip. And we go towards the end. Yes. And we go towards other episodes. For example, people not performing their duties in the Ottoman encampment. We have, or performing their duties properly. For example, Kurd, a guard at the Mezistra fortress, was reported by Yani. They used to even spy on each other. A Zimmi. Zimmi means a Christian converted to Islam. Yani, and who then became Mehmed, so it's Yani Mehmed, but they give both names of this guy. So this guy went to report Kurd because he did not perform his duties as he should have done. And therefore, Kurd's post was given to Yani Mehmed. It seemed to be quite an easy system of sneaky, what for us is quite sneaky, but it worked, it seems. Then we have Arslan, for example. He came from the sub-district of Bey Pazari. Arslan was reported by the allied bey of the Sanjak of Bey because he did not take part in any of the four assaults that happened in Malta. He was a really lazy guy and tried to avoid all sorts of things. And therefore, they took away his post, he was relieved of his post, and his post was given to Timur. They said these things on the spot, there didn't seem to be an Esta code or a code of, you know, where you had the chance to defend yourself or whatever. They were different times, of course. The two most serious cases of indiscipline. The first one is Veli. Veli, so in this case here we have Mehmed Ben Abdullah, who was a member of the Imperial Guards, serving in the 142nd Squadron for a wage of 4 akse every day. He filed in a report that the storekeeper, Veli was a storekeeper, had kept stolen goods in his stores. So therefore, Veli was removed from his post, and of course, for revealing the information, Mahmoud got his job instead as a storekeeper. Then we have, this is even more serious, Mehmed Ben Davud. Mehmed Ben Davud, on Saturday, 30 June, he crossed over to the Christians, traitor, in the fortress of Malta, and became, betrayed his troops. We go over to his timar, obviously was taken away, and given to Hassan. What is interesting is that when we go to Badi de Correggio, under the same date, 30 June, we find that uno sipahi, I'm reading in Italian now, si presenta alla posta di Sano Guerra e a nuoto raggiunge la posta. So, a sipahi, we know his name is Mehmed Ben Davud, left in Badi de Correggio, gives us same date, same episode, without giving us a name. But this also goes to show that Badi de Correggio was quite a faithful chronicler of what was actually happening. Now that we can also confirm same dates, the same things happening. Of course, as I said, apart from the soldiers, cavalry and whatever, we had medical personnel, like a doctor, Behram, who was the son of Abdullah, who had a daily wage of 8 akse, and since he had given good service and assisted the wounded during the assaults on St. Elmo, he was given a pay rise of 2 akse a day. So on the spot, his salary went up from 8 to 10 a day. We also have musicians, military musicians. The military corps, the musicians corps was known as the Mehter Takimi. So Murad, the son of Abdullah, who was in the corps of musicians, lost his life in Malta during the Great Siege. And also we have Suleiman, who was also in the band of the musicians and died in Malta too. I mean, the only ones who seemed to be dying. Of course, they were playing. No, so they were not. It seems that these were used it was a tactical thing by the Ottomans to create a lot of noise and row to make, you know, psychologically to demoralize the enemy, you know?
And by
the Scottish backpipes. Yes, but I mean they all end up dead here, one after the other. It's quite doesn't sound very attractive. Then we have, for example, this is interesting. Divan Ahmed. Divan Ahmed is a very something we find in actual day. Divan, as you know, is customs. Divan means he was a customs officer. Huh? And Divan Ahmed annoyed merchants and traders who were taking grain to the troops and charged them custom dues that were higher than the legal tariffs. So as you see, these things happen everywhere, not only in the VAT offices and whatnot. And of course, bribery, il bakshish, no? Anyway, they got him, and he was obviously relieved of his post. I would say we can go to the conclusion, more or less. So these are some of the things which I obviously subjectively took and insisted on in my study. But of course there are things which I come from a certain background, I have certain interests, which I don't even notice, and you don't notice because seen from different perspectives there are various other things, elements which one could work on. I think, as I said, in this Maltese register we have the list of names of 533 people who lost their lives in connection with the Malta campaign. As I said, there was 170 who drowned on their way to Malta or in Malta itself. 10 died of natural causes, for example. There were also mentioned 10 people who were not killed, did not have their heads chopped off. And this probably reflects the medical conditions on the island. As we know, they had a lot of problems while they were here. We have another 260 who lost their lives on Maltese soil, but no mention of the locality where they were actually killed. And then we have only one person, Bostan, the son of Kafer, who actually died, Sfortunat, on the way back on the island of Mytilene, Midilli. She's the only person mentioned dying after his leaving Malta. So basically, this is more or less it. I hope I have kept on the hour. I hope I haven't been too boring. The register is boring, but it is. Thank you.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Malta Historical Society entitled The Great Siege Through Turkish Eyes. This talk was delivered by Professor Arnold Cassola.